that's actually just some of the damage that an eruption can cause. Also on the show is seismologist Lucy Jones from the California Institute of Technology and author of The Big Ones, How Natural Disasters Have Shaped Us. So Lucy, perhaps we should start with Pompeii. What happened there and what have we learnt from this eruption?
We all have the image that everyone was buried in their homes and died because we found those corpses when Pompeii was excavated. But actually, the eruption began with what's called the Plinian eruption, where the gases and ash head high up into the atmosphere. It turned everything black. It terrified people. And we know that about 90% of the people left during that period and survived. About 10% said, hey, rocks are falling on your heads. I'm staying in my home. And then were trapped there when what's called a pyroclastic flow came through, which is when the gases lose the impetus up into the atmosphere, and as they're heavier than air, they flow down at tens of kilometers per hour, sweeping through and burning everything on touch.
Now, how do we know how many people this actually affected?
Well, the Romans had decent tax records and numbers of people that lived in the area, and we can compare it with the number of corpses that were actually found in the excavation.
Now, throughout the show, we've also heard about these gases that are thrown out after an eruption. So how far can they travel globally? I mean, does it only affect just the people near that eruption?
Oh, absolutely not. It depends upon the explosive force of the volcano and how far up into the atmosphere they go. But as long as they aren't just at the surface, like we're seeing, say, in Hawaii right now, they get up into the atmosphere, they travel over. And in fact, in 1783, there was a massive eruption in Iceland. It was called the Laki eruption. The gases that came out from there essentially poisoned all the crops and animals in Iceland. They were both fluorine and sulfide gases, and the only thing to eat had to come out of the ocean. And the whole country of Iceland came very close to extinction. But then the gases traveled on and moved out over Europe. But now the gases were much more intense and concentrated. And our estimate is actually that 23,000 people died in the summer of 1783 just in the UK. Comparing death records of that summer with other summers, reports of a fever and burning throats, and looking back, it's like, okay, they were being poisoned by these gases in from Iceland. And then there were further deaths across Europe, so they can travel a very long ways.
Gosh, are there any other knock-on effects? Like, we heard about this global cooling, so can that cause a big problem?
Oh, it can be huge. Once you get out of the immediate Earth surface, you get into the atmosphere, travel over to Europe, if it gets up into the stratosphere, then it can travel around the world. And in the stratosphere, it's much drier. And therefore, these particles, which actually are heavier than air and in the lower atmosphere get washed out relatively quickly, can last for years up in the stratosphere. So again, back in 1783, we had the poisons in the UK and in Europe, and then global cooling because these sulfide particles got up into the stratosphere and blocked the sunlight. It stopped the monsoons, which depend upon a temperature differential between the continents and the ocean. Without monsoons, the Nile didn't flood, and over 600,000 people starved to death in Egypt because of it. And in fact, there were famines in both India and Japan that were partially caused by this that killed over 11 million people.
Do we know what the likelihood is of having another eruption somewhere like this?
The probability is 100%. Just give us enough time. And of course, whether it happens this year or next century, that's a random distribution. There are many volcanoes around the world that are capable of doing this, that have done it in the past, and it's absolutely certain that it will happen again. Now, because of modern technology, if we instrument a volcano, we are much more likely to be able to predict that it's happening. But you need the instruments, you need a warning system to communicate. And as we just saw in Guatemala, you know, you've got to be able to get the warning to the people who are actually going to be affected. And that takes time, and sometimes you don't have enough time. So we really need to be ready for that humanitarian crisis. We need to have resources to help the people, because it is going to be happening at some point.
Well, let's hope we're prepared for it if we do see history repeating itself. Thank you. That was Lucy Jones from the California Institute of Technology. And thank you to all our other guests this week, Jess Johnson, Anna Young, and Evgenia Ilinskaya.